run half naked or full naked laps around the entire campus. Last year we ran through Irving, we ran through Sauter, we ran through just like every building we could imagine, ended up partying in the fountains and then mudsliding on McInnes Field. And all the clothes that you leave in that big donation pile, we choose a charity to donate them to, and it's just the biggest stress reliever of all time, and it's for a great cause. So I'm already looking forward to the Undie Run. If anyone out there is listening and they have not done the Undie Run, it's one of the 99 things you have to do before you graduate, so you should come on out this year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It really is a thing of beauty. I was actually hanging out with my girl Iggy Azalea the other night, and she said she's coming out, so should be a good thing, just a little incentive, and we'll see you guys out there.
I feel like there's not going to be any guys that come now.
What?
Oh. No guys are going to be interested in that.
I'm just speechless just thinking about it.
It's big. And that's big. I have no idea what you're talking about.
We're just talking about the event in general.
Right,
it's a huge event. Lots of people.
It's
round. Great charities. Yeah, just well-rounded.
It's really all up in your face, right?
Yeah, all up in your face. Distracting.
Great event. Mm-hmm. Just a very large. Mm-hmm. All right, so for people who like ski maybe a little bit or like aren't that great at skiing or boarding, you know, like Peter Cragen. Just kidding.
I'm not very good.
But for those people who know about ski and board club but are not that confident with their skill level, like, what advice would you give them to, like, kind of take the steps towards, like, if they do want to become better?
Well, as Essex mentioned, we are going to do, through Free Ride, the beginner nights. But I think just a really good way to learn all the sort of terms and how to understand like the proper gear and everything, a really great thing to do is just hang out, check out the Facebook group. People are constantly posting about gear, like articles that might help you, locations and places to ski, and it's just a really good way to meet people. Especially, it won't be difficult to find someone at your skill level. Let's say you're a beginner or intermediate and you're kind of shy. It's just a good way to meet people that are at your skill level that can progress with you. Whistler, obviously, is only an hour and a half away, and although you often see pictures of guys jumping off 100-foot cliffs there, it's also very beginner-friendly. There are nice, groomed, green circle runs, family fun zones, and it's a pretty good learning environment for everyone if you stay on the trails and you're not confident enough to go out and venture out on your own. Ski and Board Club's just a good place to meet people to learn how to shred with.
And honestly, if you're just on campus and you see like one of us or someone with a ski and board shirt on or whatever, no matter how naked and intimidating they look, just feel free to say what's up, and I'm sure they'll talk to you about the club and be homies, be friends.
It's true. Last year, like, I'm in second year, and last year when I started to like meet everyone in ski and board, they're definitely welcoming and always up for meeting new friends, which is cool.
Definitely, that's our MO.
Do you want to make more friends than your mom ever had?
My mom had a lot of friends.
But you can still make more if you join ski and board.
Man, have you guys heard the PSA for like the ski and board club that we have?
No,
do you want to hear
it?
Yeah, I think it's pretty old.
Yeah, let's.
Well, I don't know how old it is, but let's listen. It's right here.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
So what'd you think about that?
Well, I can't necessarily speak for that background track, but I think they summed it up really well with one word, and that being debauchery.
I think that's probably the best part of that ad. Yeah, it makes me laugh every time I hear it.
Man, I'm wondering, is that like, that's probably like a late 90s.
There's really no saying.
Yeah.
Pretty funky track.
That was great.
If you guys are interested in making a modern one, let me know.
You might have to.
It's pretty fun.
I don't know if we're going to be able to top that, though.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I think we can top
that. I think
that.
We can do it.
I think we'll be back to make a new PSA. That would be cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we all have shit to do for school, yeah. if that's correct. But thanks for coming in and chatting, guys.
Thank you, Shay. It was great to spread the skiing board love.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're very, very welcome. And join the Ski and Board Club. It's $20 membership.
Correct.
Tons of drunken great times.
Just remember.
I'm back, everybody. So right now we're here with Chenille, who's a part of the UBC Feminist Club. So Chenille, tell me a little bit about what the Feminist Club does and about your movement on campus.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, first of all. So I'm the president of the Feminist Club, and our club... Basically, it was formed because we saw a need for more feminist discussion offline.
Okay.
Because a lot of it happens. Have you ever heard of UBC News Feminism? It's like a group on Facebook.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so there's over like 1,000 members.
Wow.
I know, it's pretty big, especially because it just started last year. And
Oh,
I didn't start it. I'm one of the admins, but it was actually started by someone called Indica Keith.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't think she goes here anymore to UBC, but so it was started, and people share, you know, news stories and blogs and everything like that on this page. But the problem is, with so many people and the fact that you don't actually see people face-to-face, things escalate really quickly. And, like, you know, you've been in a YouTube argument before, I'm assuming. Maybe? No?
Not exactly, but I've seen them happen.
Yeah, exactly. And it gets pretty, like, atrocious very quickly. Same happens on feminist forums, no matter how much moderating myself or any of the other mods do. Sometimes, like, stuff just gets way out of control.
I can imagine, especially, yeah. I was actually going to ask you about, like, common misunderstandings about feminists, and does that usually kind of escalate in arguments, or
yes.
more like arguments between feminists about?
Okay, so both.
Okay,
well, if we're talking online, because it's really easy to not see the other person as a person, and
absolutely.
To see them basically, you make a lot of assumptions when you're talking with someone online. You assume they know as much as you. And based on your mood, you assume their mood is the same. So if you went online and you're, like, really angry and you're like, oh, I hate everybody, and then you start reading a conversation or get into a dialogue with someone online, you automatically assume they're angry person too, and they're attacking you when it might not be the case. So a lot of arguments do happen online between feminists relating to feminist issues, as well as between feminists and other people. But I think that's the same on, like, any type of, you know, online debate, which is why we were created, because we think that having all that stuff happening online, although the internet is a great tool, it is no substitute for face-to-face interaction and actually seeing the person, seeing their body language, you know, hearing the tone in their voice, and being able to ask questions and not have them assume that, you know, you're being insulting or something.
Absolutely. It's hard to have a legitimate discussion and really get anywhere
other than a longer webpage. Like, it's hard to really get something started.
Exactly.
So you're the president of the Feminist Club. What kind of things do you have to take care of in your everyday role as president?
As anybody who has managed anything or been a president or organizer of anything knows, you probably end up doing stuff that you weren't initially supposed to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you're like part of the executive at CITR, yes, I am. Right? So you probably end up doing a lot of things that weren't your job, but you're filling in anyway because...
That does tend to happen a lot, not really with my position, but I can see it with a lot of other people's positions.
Yeah, and that's common in all, like, you know, grassroots movements or organizations or really small businesses. People of the executive and, you know, other more involved individuals, we end up kind of like, you know, mixing and mashing what we do. People end up helping each other a lot more, but also end up doing a lot more work than you thought you were going to do. So stuff like I do.
Any student involvement, pretty much.
Exactly. So I do a lot of, I do a lot of the templates for organizing events. I make sure people, you know, do what they say they're going to do. So I do a lot of, like, hey, how's it going? How's that application going?
Don't mean to bother you, but did you get this done?
Exactly. And I also do a lot of... Well, just like booking the meetings. I lead the general meetings usually. So the general meetings are for people who are, you know, just general members of the Feminist Club or non-members. They come and they talk and they discuss. And I lead the conversation / make sure it's a safer and, you know, inclusive environment where everyone can learn and ask questions. But I also, you know, I go and put up posters. And I go and attend our events and, you know, help set up things and take down things. So I basically do a lot of random stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. And in terms of events, what kind of events and promotions do you guys put on at UBC?
So we're a really new club. We started up in September.
Oh, just this year?
Yeah. You probably heard about, like, the whole controversy that went on with the AMS and stuff.
I did, yes.
Yes. So anyway, we started up in September, and we've had 4 events since then, so 1 per month.
Wow. So what have they been?
So we did a pub trivia night.
Okay.
And that was fairly successful. I mean, a lot of the people who ended up participating were not members of the Feminist Club. They were just general people in the bar who...
It's a great way to get people involved. Exactly. Just, like, in the funnest, most relaxed way possible.
Yeah, exactly. And so... I mean, although a lot of the people on my executive were kind of like, you know, not a lot of people, members of our club came, I thought it was great because there was people who would never, ever, like, be involved in a feminist-type event who
contemplate those kinds of questions.
Exactly. Although, to be fair, when we got back the pub trivia sheets, one, like, group did just write Angelina Jolie for every single answer.
So. Oh, my goodness.
And my,
that's
like...
That's annoying, but I guess that's kind of to be expected whenever you're kind of growing a movement like this.
Exactly. But I don't know. I thought it was funny. I mean, like, they stayed, and they ended up hearing the answers to the questions, and they ended up hearing... They probably realized they didn't know a lot of the stuff that we were talking about, and we were talking about some pretty basic human rights things. Like, for example, his dad, Pierre Trudeau.
Yeah.
The guy who, like, you know, legalized gay marriage and, you know, all that stuff. And that's pretty basic Canadian civil rights. And the fact that people don't know that would probably make them question, yo, I should maybe start participating.
Read up on this stuff.
Exactly. But yeah, so we did a pub trivia night. Yep. We did a movie night, and our movie night... For anybody who hasn't heard of this movie, The World Before Her, it's an excellent documentary.
I love documentaries.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay.
When did it come out? Is it relatively recent?
I don't know when it came out. We did it in collaboration with the Sociology Students Association.
Okay.
But basically, it was following these two different groups in India. So, you know, in India, like, there's... Parts of it are becoming more westernized.
Yeah.
And there's, like, beauty pageants over there now. So, you know, there's Miss World. Well, there's Miss India. So they followed the contestants of Miss India. And they also followed these girls who were taking part in a Hindu nationalist training camp.
Okay.
And so you start off and you're like looking at the Miss World, I mean Miss India competitors, and you're like, wow, they're being so objectified and taken advantage of. And like there's a scene where, you know, they have to do Botox and skin whitening, and it's like, holy shit, this is like racist and like
Botox.
Wow.
Botox?
Yeah.
Are they like 20 years old?
Yeah, exactly.
That's ridiculous.
To like make their chin right
more pointy, yeah, and angular.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's supposed to like be a third of their face, but whatever. Any
wow.
I know. So then you're like looking at them, and then you're looking at the Hindu training camps, and you're like, wow, those girls are empowered. Like they're teaching them how to fight and how to like, you know, be disciplined and stuff. Wow, that's like really great. And then as the movie progresses, you're like, okay, I don't really know what to think now, because they're actually teaching these girls that, you know, Hinduism is like essential, and so kill all the Muslims, which is terrible. So it really gets into the racial and ethnic violence in India, which is like a serious problem. And it also shows how, you know, these girls are being basically told that their only purpose in life is either to bear children or to die for Hinduism.
So your perspectives like drastically shift.
Exactly.
In the middle of the movie.
Yeah, because like the women who are the Miss India contest, yes, they're being objectified. Like, really, really objectified. There's this one scene where the male photographer, obviously, he's like, I want to see who has the sexiest legs. So what we're going to do is we're going to cover the rest of their bodies and just do like a photo shoot with their legs. And they make them dress up in these things that look like Ku Klux Klan outfits, which is terrible. And parade them up and down, and it's like, hey, nice legs, nice legs, nice legs. And it's just so bad. But these women are really intelligent. When you interview them, they're like, yeah, like, this is my only way to get power and, like, a career and respect in this society, so I'm going to do this. And
so that was their way of taking ownership over, like, their own lives and not being controlled.
Exactly.
Which is very ironic.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, it's a very interesting movie.
It sounds amazing. What was it called again?
The World Before Her.
The World Before Her.
Yes.
Everybody.
Watch it.
The World Before Her.
Yes. So there was that. What else did we do? We did, our first event was an intro to feminism type seminar.
Okay.
We did it on gender fluidity and sexuality 101. Basically just, you know, the format was we did a trivia Jeopardy game, and there was like 50 people in the room, so it was a little bit difficult. And then we like watched a video and then watched some stuff from Ellen DeGeneres.
Love,
I know, right?
Woman.
Right? Have you seen the one with the Bic pens, the Bic for her pens?
No, I haven't.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
Oh, wait, is that the one where she's like making fun of the Bic because it's like a pen for her? Like,
yeah.
Great, we write differently than men. Like,
it's
we need
like
a pen. I think I did see that a long time ago.
Exactly. It was really funny. Anyway, watch it, people, on YouTube. Ellen DeGeneres, Bic for her pen. It's hilarious.
Anything Ellen DeGeneres does, watch on YouTube.
Exactly. So there was that. And then our last event, which was actually on Thursday, last Thursday.
Yeah.
We did an open mic in collaboration with Oxfam UBC, and it was to raise money for the Downtown Eastside Women's Center.
Okay.
Yeah, so we raised a little over $200, so, you know, not bad. And there was some major talent that came out. Like, I was surprised. There's this one band, everybody check them out, they're called Howl Often, like howl as in, awoo, often. And there are three women, and they do really, like, country-type music.
Okay.
And they do three-part harmony. They've got a violin and a guitar, and it's just, I was blown away. I was like, holy crap, that is awesome. Yes.
Wow. So it sounds like all of your events have been pretty successful, considering this is the first year your club has been in operation.
Yeah, and it's really thanks to, like, all of the executives on my club, especially three, because there was a new one that came in recently, and she's been really, like, really helping out. Might as well just give a shout out to them. Esther Ra, Gabe, Richie, and Iman, they were all great, and they've helped out so much. So if y'all are listening, thank you.
In terms of the members of the clubs, not the execs, what kind of things do they do? Basically, they come to the meetings, and you have your discussions, and they attend the events, and they can help out with certain things, volunteering and stuff like that?
Yeah, if they want to help out. I mean, they can, email us or, message us on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly the members have just been attending our events, we did a feminist lunch at
Mercante's?
Mercante, there we go.
Great pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so good. they just come and they just talk and hang out and get to know one another and connect, and it's good.
So at your meetings, do you literally just kind of start, today I thought we'd talk about this, and then everyone kind of just adds their different opinions, or...
I try to get it away from me talking as much as possible.
Okay.
So I start out, because, everybody's really awkward when they first start out the meeting, and everyone, no one really knows anyone, or they kind of know each other, and so they're just waiting for people to, start the conversation. And so, you start by saying, so what did you think of, Emma Watson's speech, or Beyonce, or whatever, or, the sexual harassment video that came out, and then, generally, people are a little bit reluctant to speak, so I'm kind of mean. I just, point to you. What do you think?
You have to do what you got to do.
Exactly, because or else they won't talk, or the people who just always talk will always talk. But it really gets people, engaging, and then basically I only talk when I feel the conversation is dying. Or when I feel that someone hasn't had an opportunity to speak, then I ask them, what do you think of this? And hopefully they'll say something.
And if somebody wants to become a member, how can they do that?
They can either come to our meetings, they can email us, they can message us, on Facebook, they can come to our events, really anything. Just say, hey, I want to be a member. And then we'll be like, yeah, cool. Membership is $10. We will give you a awesome button that says that you're a feminist and some cool stickers and a membership card, and then you get into all of our events for free. Yay!
Awesome. So what's the Facebook page called? Just so everybody can clearly know.
It's called Feminist Club UBC Campus.
All right, guys. So yeah. If you're interested in joining or you just want to check it out, Feminist Club UBC Campus, hit that like button.
Yes. Like it. Love it.
So, are there any current movements in feminism that you're really watching or interested in? I was going to ask about Emma Watson's He for She campaign. I don't
I haven't really paid much attention to Emma Watson's He for She campaign since her UN speech.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm really paying attention to now is all this stuff that's going down in Ferguson.
Yes.
All the, anti-black violence and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really brought to the forefront, how racism is still a huge, huge part of the U.S. and Canada. I mean, we can't ignore the fact that, anti-Aboriginal violence is rampant in Canada.
I think a lot of the time people in Canada are like, what? We're Canadian. Nothing's wrong.
Exactly. And it's oh, you are so naive. You have no idea. Vancouver was built on racism. The Chinese were used basically almost like slave labor. And then there was racist laws against the Japanese and India from, Indian immigrants.
Yeah.
Preventing them from getting into Vancouver and stuff like that. And then basically segregating them. And then, of course, there was, laws which were established because in, I think, the late 1800s, early 1900s, a lot of Canadians thought Aboriginal people would die out. So they just established laws which just assumed the Aboriginal people would be extinct within, a few decades.
That's horrible.
I know. And then there was the reservation camps when they found out, oh, shit, these Aboriginal people aren't dying. So let's just, like, you know, take them away, assimilate them, and make it so that they're, you know, like, civilized. And it's just, like, fucking messed up. And the last, you know, I think residential school,
yeah,
it closed in the 1990s. So there's still quite a few people who are affected by that because, you know...
That wasn't that long ago.
Exactly.
Not even 20 years ago.
Exactly. So people who are in their 30s could have been, you know, at those residential schools and...
Have vivid, like, memories of it.
Exactly. And it's not just that. Like, it continues. When you have a family member who was, you know, part of a residential school, you know, they probably suffered physical, mental, and sexual violence, or, like, any combination of the three. And that affects their personality, and that might make them depressed or, you know, something like that. And that affects, you know, their children or anyone around them. And so it's just, like, this cycle which continues forever. So anyway, that's what I'm paying attention to more, because the thing about feminism is a lot of people think it's just women's rights, but it's not just that. It is analyzing the different types of structures of dominance and power, which make it so that, you know, women, members of the LGBTQ plus community, and, you know, people of different ethnicities or religions are oppressed, and, you know, are not equal economically, politically, or socially. So, you know, it's called intersectional feminism. So that's, like, the main one, I guess I'm following. Everything.
Okay, and I would like to hear more about that, but we're going to take a quick PSA break, and we will be back really shortly with Chenille from the Feminist Club.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
And we're back. So, Chenille, do you have any feminist inspirations?
Inspirations?
Any feminists that you just, I don't know, any you follow their teachings or anything from history? I don't know.
So I guess, okay, I can't really say that I follow any person in particular. There are plenty of awesome, you know, feminist role models like bell hooks, Gloria Steinem, you know, just a lot of them. But I guess my feminist inspirations are more personal.
Okay.
I'm inspired by all of the people that I meet at UBC, especially the ones in social activism, and my mom, and, you know, just, like, people in general. I mean, like, I have learned so much from just talking to people in the social activist communities, way more than I would ever learn from a book. Like, yeah, you learn things from books, and all of that stuff, but I feel that when you're talking to someone, it hits you at a deeper level. Because, I don't know, maybe that's just me. Some people, like, they get really into books and, like, that's how they, you know, figure out the world. But for me, I really need to communicate and talk with people. And so...
I'm completely the same way.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? Awesome. Like, for example, people on campus who have inspired me or taught me things. Gabe Ricci, she's one of the people on my executive. She is so articulate. She knows so much. She's Aboriginal, and she just, like, has such a calm, collected, and cool personality, but she's very observant and takes in a lot of things and can express it very well. So I learned a lot of stuff from her, and I've actually learned a lot of stuff just from our general members. Like, I by no means consider myself an expert on feminism. Like, not at all. I was introduced to feminism.